This is Audible.
Ideal Audiobooks presents Every Last Word by Tamara Ireland Stone, narrated by Amy Rubinate. Six months earlier. I shouldn't be reading the notes. Haley trims a rose and passes it to me. As I attach the note to the stem with sparkly pink ribbon, I read it. I can't help it. This one's a little over the top, but it's still sweet. I give it to Olivia, and she drops it in the classroom-specific bucket. No way, you guys, Olivia snorts, laughing hard as she turns the card over in her hand. I guess she's reading them, too. I can't tell who wrote this, but poor boy, this is so cheesy. Someone's attempt at heartfelt poetry makes its way around the circle. Alexis falls back against my bed in hysterics. Caitlin and Haley double over on my rug. Eventually, I join in. This is mean. Let's not read them, I say, hiding the rose in the middle of the bucket, wanting to protect this anonymous guy who put his heart on the line for some girl in his calculus class named Jessica. Olivia grabs the stack of cards in front of me and starts thumbing through them. God, who are these people? And how do we not know any of them? We're not losers, Alexis offers. It's a big school, Haley counters. Okay, back to work. The flowers are wilting. Caitlin's still laughing as she snaps back to her role as the leader of our Valentine's Day fundraiser. Olivia, since you like the notes so much, switch places with Samantha. Olivia shakes her head and her ponytail goes flying. No way, I like my job. I'll switch. My hand's getting tired anyway, Haley says, and the two of us trade spots. I grab a rose out of the bucket and pick the scissors up off the floor. The instant I slide my fingers through the handles, this thought hits me out of nowhere, and before I have time to react, I feel my brain sink its teeth in and latch on tight, already preparing to fight me for it. My hand starts trembling and my mouth goes dry. It's just a thought. I let the scissors fall to the floor and I shake out my hands a few times, looking around the circle to be sure no one's watching me. I'm in control. I try again. Rose in one hand, scissors in the other. I squeeze my fingers together, but my palms feel clammy, and my fingers are tingling, and I can't get a solid grip. I look up at Caitlin, sitting directly across from me, watching her face twist and blur as a wave of nausea passes over me. Breathe. Find a new thought. If I cut it once, I'll keep going. I know I will. I'll move on to the next rose and the next one, and I'll keep cutting until there's nothing left but a huge pile of stems, leaves, and petals. After that, I'll massacre those syrupy, sweet, carefully written notes. Every single one of them. God, that's so twisted. Then I'll take the scissors to Olivia's ponytail and cut right through that hair tie. Shit. New thought. New thought. I need a glass of water, I say, standing and hoping none of them notice the sweat beating up on my forehead. Now? Caitlin asks. Come on, Samantha, you'll hold everything up. My legs are wobbly, and I'm not sure I can trust them to get me downstairs. But somehow, the scissors are gone, and the banister is in my hand instead. I head straight into the kitchen and run my hands under the water. The water is cold. Listen to the water.
Are you okay?
Paige's voice breaks through the chatter in my head. I hadn't even seen my little sister sitting at the counter doing her homework. That's when I spot the knife block, full of knives, and a pair of scissors. I could slice right through her hair. I take big steps backward until I slam into the refrigerator. My knees give out and I slide down to the floor, gripping the sides of my head, burying my face in my hands to make it dark, repeating the mantras. Sam, open your eyes. Mom's voice sounds far away, but I obey her words, and when I do, the two of us are nose to nose. Talk to me, now. I look over at the staircase wide-eyed. Don't worry, she says. They won't find out. They're upstairs. I hear Mom whispering to Paige, telling her to take a bag of chips up to my room and keep my friends distracted. Then she grabs both of my hands so hard, her wedding ring digs into one of my knuckles. "They're just thoughts," she says calmly. "Say it, please." "They're just thoughts." I can echo her words, but not the steadiness in her voice. "Good. You're in control." When I look away from her, she grips my arms harder. "I'm in control." She's wrong. I'm not. How many thoughts does the brain automatically deliver in a single day? Mom moves on to facts to help me center myself. 70,000, I whisper as tears splash onto my jeans. "That's right. Do you act on 70,000 thoughts a day?" I shake my head. "Of course you don't. This thought was one in 70,000. It's not special." "It's not special." "Good." Mom pinches my chin and lifts my head, forcing me to look at her again. "I love you, Sam." She smells like her favorite lavender-scented lotion, and I inhale it, feeling a host of newer, prettier thoughts overpowering the darker, scarier ones. "Whatever you're thinking, it's okay. It doesn't mean anything about you. Got it? Now tell me." The two of us have been here before. It hasn't happened in a long time, not like this, but Mom slips right into her assigned role as if it's second nature. She's well trained. "Scissors," I whisper, dropping my head to my chest, feeling dirty and sick and humiliated. I hate telling her these awful thoughts, but I hate the thought spiral even more, and this is my ticket out. I'm well trained too. "The roses, Olivia's hair, and Paige." Mom doesn't make me finish. She wraps her arms around me, and I grab a hold of her t-shirt, sobbing into her shoulder, telling her I'm sorry. "You have nothing to be sorry for." She pulls away and kisses my forehead. "Now stay here. I'll be right back." "Please don't," I beg, but I know she won't listen. She's doing what she has to do. I dig my fingernails into the back of my neck 3 times, over and over again until she returns. When I look up, she's crouched down in front of me again, holding the scissors flat in her hand. "Take them, please." I don't want to touch them, but I don't have a choice. My fingertip connects with the cold metal, and I let it slide over the blade, lightly, slowly, just tickling the surface. When I feel the handle, I curl my fingers through the holes. Mom's hair is dangling in my face. I could cut it, but I would never do that. "Good. It's just a pair of scissors. They triggered a few scary thoughts, but you won't act on them, because you, Samantha McAllister, are a good person." Her voice sounds closer now. I drop the scissors on the floor and give them a hard push to get them as far away from me as possible. I throw my arms around Mom's shoulders, hugging her hard, hoping this is the last time we go through this, but knowing it isn't. The anxiety attacks are like earthquakes. I'm always relieved when the ground stops shaking, but I know there will be another one eventually. And again, I'll never see it coming. What am I going to tell them? My friends can't know about my OCD or the debilitating, uncontrollable thoughts, because my friends are normal and perfect. They pride themselves on normalcy and perfection, and they can't ever find out how far I am from those two things. "Paige is sitting in for you on Rose duty. The girls think you're helping me with something in the kitchen." Mom hands me a dish towel so I can clean myself up. "Go back upstairs whenever you're ready." I sit alone for a long time, taking deep breaths. I still can't look at the scissors on the far end of the kitchen floor, and I'm pretty sure Mom will hide all the sharp objects for the next few days, but I'm okay now. Still, I can hear this one thought hiding in the dark corners of my mind. It doesn't attack like the others, but it's frightening in a totally different way. Because it's the one that never leaves, and it's the one that scares me most. What if I'm crazy? Now, more than anything. Lane 3. It's always lane number 3. My coaches think it's funny. Quirky. A thing like not washing your lucky socks or growing a rally beard. And that's perfect. That's all I want them to know. I step up to the top of the block and twist at the waist, shaking out my arms and legs. Squeezing my toes tight around the edge, I look down at the water and run both thumbs over the block's scratchy tape 3 times.
Swimmers, take your marks.
Coach Kevin's voice echoes off the clubhouse walls at the far end of the pool, and when he blows his whistle, my body's response is purely Pavlovian. Palm over hand, my elbows lock as I press my arms into my ears and throw myself forward, stretching and reaching and holding the position until my fingertips slice through the surface. And then, for 10 blissful seconds, there's no noise at all, except the sound of water whooshing past my ears. I kick hard and lock in my song. The first one that pops into my head is a happy tune with catchy lyrics, so I start my butterfly stroke, throwing both arms over my head in perfect synchronization with the beat. Kick, kick, throw. Kick, kick, throw. 1, 2, 3. Before I know it, I'm touching the opposite end of the pool, doing a tight turn, and pushing hard off the wall. I don't look up or left or right. As Coach says, right now, at this moment in the race, no one matters but you. My head leaves the water every few seconds, and when it does, I can hear the coaches screaming at us to get our chins down or our hips up, to straighten our legs or arch our backs. I don't hear my name, but I check myself anyway. Today, everything feels right. I feel right. And fast. I increase the tempo of the song and kick it into gear for the last few strokes. And when my fingertips connect with the edge of the pool, I pop up and steal a glance at the clock. I shaved 0.4 seconds off my best time. I'm breathing hard as Cassidy gives me a fist bump from lane 4 and says, "Damn, you're gonna slaughter me at county this weekend." She's won the county championship 3 years in a row. I'll never beat her, and I know she's just being nice, but it feels good to hear her say it anyway. The whistle blows again, and someone dives off the block above me, signaling my turn to exit. I pull myself up out of the water, peeling off my swim cap as I head for my towel.
Whoa, where on earth did that come from?
When I look up, I'm eye to eye with Brandon. Or more accurately, eye to chest with Brandon. I force myself to keep looking up, past his thin t-shirt and to his eyes, even though the temptation to check out the way his shorts hug his hips is almost more than I can resist. During my first summer at the club, Brandon was just an older teammate with an insanely fast freestyle, who always put up the most points in meets and taught the little kids to swim. But for the last 2 summers, he's returned from college as a junior coach, my coach, and that makes him strictly off-limits, and even hotter. Thanks. I'm still trying to catch my breath. I guess I just found a good rhythm. Brandon shows me his perfect teeth, and those crinkles next to his eyes are even more pronounced.
Would you do that again at county, please?
I try to come up with a funny comeback, something that will keep him smiling at me like this, but instead my cheeks get hot while he stares at me, waiting for me to reply. I look at the ground, chastising myself for my lack of creativity, while I watch the water drip from my suit, forming a puddle underneath my feet. Brandon must follow my gaze, because he suddenly gestures at the row of towels strewn across the wall behind him and says,
"Stay there, don't move."
A few seconds later, he's back.
"Here."
He wraps a towel around my shoulders and slides it back and forth a few times, and I wait for him to drop the ends, but he doesn't. I look up at his eyes and realize he's staring at me, like maybe he wants to kiss me. And I know I'm looking at him like I want him to, because I do. It's all I think about. His eyes are still locked on mine, but I know he'll never make the first move. So I take one brave step forward, then another. And without overthinking what I'm about to do, I press my dripping wet suit against his t-shirt, feeling the water soak it through to his skin. He lets out a breath as he balls the ends of the towel in his fists and uses it to pull me even closer. My hands leave his hips and find his back, and I feel his muscles tense beneath my palms as he tips his head down and kisses me, hard, and then he pulls on my towel again. His mouth is warm and he parts his lips and oh my God, this is finally happening. And even though there are people everywhere, and I keep hearing the whistle blow and the coaches calling out behind me, I don't care, because right now I just want to.
Sam, you okay?
I blink fast and shake my head as Brandon releases the towel, and I feel it fall slack at my sides.
Where'd you go, kid?
He's still standing 2 steps away, and not even the slightest bit damp. And I'm not a kid, I'm 16. He's only 19. It's not that different. He adjusts his baseball cap and gives me that ridiculously adorable smile of his.
I thought I lost you for a second there.
No. You did the exact opposite of losing me. My chest feels heavy as the fantasy floats up into the air and disappears from sight. I was just thinking about something.
I bet I know.
You do?
Yeah, and you have nothing to worry about. Push yourself like that at county and keep swimming year-round, and you'll have your choice of college scholarships.
He starts to say something else, but Coach Kevin yells for everyone to take a spot on the wall. Brandon gives me a chummy pat on the shoulder. A coach-like pat.
I know how badly you want this, Sam.
More than you could possibly understand. He's still 2 steps away. I wonder what would happen if I really opened up my towel and wrapped him up in it.
Sam, wall!
Coach Kevin yells. He points at the rest of the team, already gathered and staring at me. I squeeze in next to Cassidy, and when Coach is out of earshot, she elbows me and whispers, Okay, that was cute, that thing with a towel. Wasn't it? I shoot her a surprised look. At the beginning of the summer, Cassidy called him Coach Crush, but over the last few weeks she's become increasingly irritated with me for not giving up. I said it was cute, not that it means anything. Maybe it does. Sam, sweetie, really, it doesn't. He grabbed your towel and dried you off a bit, but that's it, because he has a girlfriend. In college. So? I lean forward, trying not to make it obvious that I'm looking for him. He's over by the office, drinking a soda and talking with one of the lifeguards. So, he has a girlfriend in college, she repeats, stressing the last word. He talks about her all the time, and it's obvious to everyone except you that he's totally in love with her. Ouch. Sorry, it had to be done. Cassidy piles her long red hair on top of her head in a messy bun, and then grips my arm with both hands. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. She comes in closer. Look around, Sam, she says, gesturing to a long line of our teammates. There are plenty of fish in the fancy private swim club sea. I look around and see boys in tight speedos, with solid abs and muscular arms, their skin tanned by the Northern California sun, their bodies lean and solid after 3 months in the water. But none of them are anywhere near as flawless as Brandon. Even if I did find one of them remotely attractive, what's the point now? Summer's nearly over. Cassidy tilts her head to one side, pouting dramatically. She brings her fingertip to my nose and sighs. What am I going to do without you, Sam? My stomach clenches into a tight fist as she voices a thought that's been haunting me since the first day of August. Like all my summer friends, Cassidy has never known me outside the pool. She has no idea who I am when I'm not here, so she doesn't know how backward she has it. You'll be fine, I say, because it's true. Me? I'm not so sure. My psychiatrist nailed it back in June, when I practically floated into her office and announced that I'd taken my last final. She strode over to the mini-fridge, poured sparkling apple cider into 2 plastic champagne flutes and said, To the triumphant return of summer, Sam, as we clinked glasses. But it's coming to an end. In 2 weeks I'll be back in school, Cassidy will be in L.A., and Brandon will be at college. I'll be missing them, along with my early morning dives into lane number 3. I'll be Samantha again. And more than anything, I'll be missing Sam.
Five of Us.
You look fantastic, Mom says as I step into the kitchen. I better,
I spent the last hour putting myself together for the first day of school. I left my hair down and ironed it straight. I'm wearing a sheer top over a white camisole, skinny jeans, and the wedges I begged Mom to buy me. My eyes are lined, my lips defined, and my foundation is effectively masking the stress-induced breakout on my chin. Thank you. I hug her tight, hoping she knows I'm not thanking her for the compliment alone. It's for everything she's done for me this summer. For coming to all my swim meets and cheering so loudly she's hoarse every Sunday night. It's for all those late-night talks, especially over the last week when Cassidy left for L.A., Brandon went back to the East Coast, and the first day of school began to loom over me like an ominous storm cloud. Mom's wearing that encouraging smile she always plasters on when she knows I'm nervous. Stop looking at me like that, please, I say, fighting the urge to roll my eyes. I'm fine, really. My cell phone chirps and I pull it from my pocket to check the screen. Alexis wants a ride to school today. Why? Mom asks as she fills a bowl with cereal for Paige. She knows it's against the law to drive with passengers in your first year. Of course Alexis knows the law. She's just surprised I'm following it since most people don't. I text her back, telling her I can't give her a ride because if my parents found out, I'd lose my car. I hit send and flip the phone around so Mom can read the screen. She gives an approving nod. I shove the phone back in my pocket and hitch my backpack over my shoulder. Have a good day, sixth grader, I say to Paige as she spoons a big bite of cereal into her mouth. As I head for the garage, I'm still texting back and forth with Alexis, who's begging me to change my mind. I finally drop the phone into the cup holder as I pull out of the driveway, ending the discussion without ever telling her the real reason I won't pick her up today, or any time in the near future. Earlier this month, on my 16th birthday, Dad took me to the DMV to get my license, and when we got home a few hours later, there was a used Honda Civic parked in our garage. It was totally unexpected, and it meant so much more than regular transportation to me. It meant Mom, Dad, and my psychiatrist thought I could handle it. I was dying to show off my new car, but Alexis, Caitlin, Olivia, and Haley were all out of town on their respective family vacations, and Cassidy was grounded, so I just drove around by myself for the rest of the afternoon, listening to music and enjoying how the steering wheel felt in my hands. But every once in a while, I glanced down at the odometer, fascinated by the way the numbers changed. I felt this strange charge whenever the last digit hit the number 3. When I finally pulled into the driveway that evening, the last digit was resting on a 6, so I backed out again and drove around the block a few times until the odometer stopped where it belonged. And now I have to do that every time I park. I'm not about to let Alexis and the rest of my friends in on my secret, so I'm happy to have the law as an excuse to drive alone. As I pull into the student lot, the odometer is on 9, so I have to drive all the way to the far end by the tennis courts before I can park on a 3. As I cut the ignition, my stomach turns over violently and my mouth feels dry, so I sit there for a minute taking deep breaths. It's a new year, a fresh start. The anxiety eases as I walk through campus. Avery Peterson squeals when she sees me. We hug and promise to catch up later, and then she returns to Dylan O'Keefe and grabs his hand. He was my obsession for the first 3 months of freshman year, starting when he asked me to the homecoming dance, and ending when Nick Adler kissed me at a New Year's Eve party a few months later and promptly replaced him. A few steps later, I spot Tyler Riola sitting with his lacrosse buddies at a table on the far end of the quad. He had my undivided attention for the first part of sophomore year, until I started dating Kurt Frazier, the only guy who wasn't a one-sided fixation. I liked Kurt a lot, and he actually liked me back, at least for a few months. Kurt was hard for me to shake, but Brandon finally took center stage in my mind when summer started. I picture him in his Speedo, and as I turn the corner, I wonder what he's doing right now. I stop short. That can't be my locker. The door is wrapped in bright blue paper, and there's a giant silver bow tied around the middle. I run my hand across it. I can't believe they did this. I glance up just in time to see the crowd part for Alexis. As usual, she looks like she just stepped off the cover of Teen Vogue, with her long blonde hair, striking green eyes, and perfect skin. I can hear her high heels tapping on the concrete as her designer sundress swings with each step. She's holding a giant cupcake with purple and white frosting. Caitlin is on her right, looking equally pretty, but in a completely different way. She's exotic pretty, sexy pretty. She's wearing a tight-fitting top with thin straps, and her dark wavy hair is cascading over her bare shoulders. Haley peels away from the pack and speeds toward me, with her arms spread wide. She throws them around my neck and says, "God, you have no idea how much I missed you this summer." I squeeze her tighter and tell her I missed her too. She looks amazing, still tanned from her summer in Spain. Olivia is now within arm's reach, so I grasp big chunks of her newly dyed jet black hair with both hands. "Okay, this is totally working for you," I tell her, and she pops her hip and says, "I know, right?" As my friends close in, all the people around us stop what they're doing to gather in a little tighter. Because that's what happens when the Crazy Eights do anything. People watch. We started calling ourselves that back in kindergarten, and it kind of stuck. There were 8 of us until freshman year, when Ella's family moved to San Diego and Hannah transferred to a private high school. Last year, Sarah landed the lead in the school play and started hanging out with her new drama club friends, and we were down to 5. That's when I started to realize that friendships in odd numbers are complicated. 8 was good, 6 was good, but 5? 5 was bad, because someone's always the odd girl out. Often, that's me. "Happy birthday, gorgeous," Alexis says, bouncing in place as she gives me the cupcake. The smile on my face grows even wider. "My birthday was 2 weeks ago." "True, but we were all talking about how much it must suck to have a summer birthday. None of us even got to celebrate with you." I'm surprised Alexis hasn't mentioned this earlier. I saw her twice last week, and both times we talked about the spa day her mom is planning and the new convertible she's getting for her birthday. "This is so perfect, you guys," I say, holding up the cupcake and then pointing to the bow on my locker. "Seriously, thank you." There's a chorus of "you're welcomes" and "we love yous," and then Alexis steps forward. "Hey," she whispers, "sorry about all the texts this morning, but I have to talk to you about something, and I was hoping to do it in private." "What's up?" I try to make my voice sound light, but the second she said the words, "I have to talk to you," my stomach twisted right back into that tight knot I've been trying to loosen since the parking lot. Those words are never good. "We'll talk about it at lunch," she says. And just when I was starting to feel like this was the best first day of school ever, I'm now dreading lunch. Caitlin steps in to hug me. "Are you shaking?" she asks. "Breathe, breathe, breathe. Too much coffee this morning, I guess." The warning bell rings and I turn to my locker and start dialing the combination with trembling fingers. "I'll see you guys later." Once the 8s are gone, the rest of the crowd takes off to first period. I set the cupcake on the empty shelf and grab the door to steady myself. Taped on the inside of my locker door, I see all the photos and mementos I've saved over the last 2 years. There are pictures of the 5 of us dressed up in the school colors for Spirit Week, and the 4 of us surrounding Caitlin when she won Homecoming Princess last year. There's a copy of the noise ordinance we got when Alexis's parents left town last Halloween, and we threw this epic party people talked about for months afterward. Scattered around, covering any sliver of paint, are my ticket stubs. It's an impressive, eclectic collection, ranging from bands no one's ever heard of to names like Beyoncé, Lady Gaga, and Justin Timberlake, thanks to Olivia's dad, who owns an indie record label and always gets us seats in the VIP section. I use the small mirror to check my makeup and whisper, "Don't freak out." Then I close the door and stare at the wrapping one more time, letting my fingertip trail across the surface, running my thumb across the silver bow. "That was really nice." The voice is so faint, at first I wonder if I'm hearing things. I turn to see who spoke, but her locker is blocking her face.
Excuse me?
I hope she didn't see me pathetically fondling the bow. You have really nice friends. She swings the door closed and walks over to me, pointing at the wrapping paper. I almost reply, not always, but I catch myself. It's a new year, a new start. And today, I do have really nice friends.
How'd they get your locker open?
They all know the combo. It's kind of a birthday tradition. We've been wrapping each other's lockers since middle school. This is only the second time they've wrapped mine, but you know, those were big birthdays. 13, and now... I reach for the silver bow again. 16. Why am I telling her this? I look around, realizing that the corridors are now empty.
I'm sorry, do I know you?
Apparently not. She points to the end of the row. My locker has been there since freshman year, but we haven't formally met or anything. I'm Caroline Madsen. I take her in, starting with her feet. Brown hiking boots, baggy, faded jeans, an unbuttoned flannel shirt that might be considered cool if it belonged to her boyfriend, but I'm pretty sure that's not the case. Underneath it, her t-shirt reads, "What would Scooby do?" That makes me laugh to myself. I continue up to her face. Not a stitch of makeup. A purple and white striped ski cap, even though it's the end of August. In California. Samantha McAllister. The final bell rings, signaling that we're both officially tardy on the first day of school. She tugs on her shirt sleeve, uncovering an old beat-up watch. We better get to class. It was nice to meet you, Sam.
Sam.
Last year I asked the eights to call me Sam. Caitlin laughed and said that's her dog's name, and Olivia said it's a guy's name, and Alexis declared that she would never, ever go by Alex. I watch Caroline round the corner, and by then it's too late to correct her. Keep a secret. We're eating lunch under our tree in the quad when Alexis takes a dramatic breath, places her palms flat on the ground, and leans into the circle.
I can't stand this anymore. I have something to tell you guys.
Caitlin rests a hand on Alexis's back, like she's offering silent reassurance. It's about my birthday this weekend, Alexis says, and the rest of us squeeze in tight. We've been planning to go to this amazing spa in Napa for months now, right? Well, I guess my mom should have scheduled the appointments earlier, because when she called 2 weeks ago, they told her there was a wedding this weekend and everything was booked solid. She sighs dramatically. She could only get 3 appointments.
Whatever, we'll go to another spa, Olivia says.
That's what I suggested, but my mom said she called all the high-end places, and none of them could accommodate all of us on such short notice. Besides, this is her favorite. She's been going there on special occasions for years, and she's always wanted to take me.
Can we go on Sunday instead, or the following weekend? I ask. Alexis looks at me, and her eyebrows knit together.
Saturday is my birthday, Samantha.
She takes a sharp inhale as she removes 2 envelopes from her bag. She hands one to Caitlin and the other to Olivia.
I've been thinking about this nonstop over the last week, and I finally decided it was only fair to pick the 2 people I've known the longest.
You've known all of us since kindergarten, Haley says, voicing what I'm pretty sure each one of us is thinking.
True, but our moms, she says,
gesturing to Caitlin and Olivia, knew each other when we were in preschool. And the 2 of them nod like that explains everything. Then they actually have the audacity to start opening their envelopes in front of us. Again, Haley speaks on behalf of us losers.
Samantha has a car now. Maybe the 2 of us can drive up and meet you for lunch?
Haley's pleading expression makes me actually consider it for a moment. But Mom and Dad would never agree. Even if they did, what would happen when we arrived at the restaurant? It might take me 10 minutes to park correctly. What if there's a valet? I can't drive.
I thought about that, Alexis says. But she won't drive with passengers. Right, Samantha?
My face gets hotter the longer they stare at me. I shake my head. Alexis glances around the circle, shifting the blame to me,
using nothing but her eyes. The thoughts start gathering, butting up against the caution tape surrounding my brain, strategizing and preparing to rush in and take over. I hold them off, telling myself all the right things, repeating the mantras, taking deep breaths, counting slowly. 1. Breathe. 2. Breathe. 3. Breathe. It's not working. My face is getting hotter and my hands are clammy, and my breathing feels shallow, and I need to get out of here, fast. I pull my phone out of my pocket and pretend I just received a text. I have to run. My new lab partner needs my notes from class. I pack up my untouched sandwich, hoping no one asks about the lab partner I don't actually have. You're not upset, are you? Alexis asks sweetly. I bite the inside of my lower lip 3 times before I make eye contact. Of course not. We get it, right? I direct the question at Haley, acknowledging the two of us as allies, stuck on the bottom rungs of Alexis's social ladder. And then I walk away as slowly as possible, ignoring the fact that every muscle in my body wants to run. When I feel the first sign of a panic attack, I'm supposed to go to a quiet place with dim lighting, where I can be alone and get my thoughts under control. My psychiatrist has burned these instructions into my brain in a way that makes them second nature. But instead, I duck around the corner out of sight and stand there, my back against the science building, my face pressed into my hands, like I can achieve the same effect if I can only block out the glare of the sun. Eventually, I start walking through campus and let the path take me wherever it leads. It leads me to the theater. I've been here before for the annual talent show, the band recital, school plays, basically the slew of events we're forced to attend because they take place in lieu of class. The five of us always ditch our assigned row and sit together in the back, snickering to ourselves and poking fun at the people on stage, until one of the teachers gets tired of shushing us and sends us all outside, as if that's punishment. We sit on the grass talking and laughing, until everyone who had to stay and watch the entire performance finally files out. I hunker down in a seat in the center of the first row, because it's actually darkest here, and I'm already feeling calmer, despite the fact that Alexis just force-ranked her best friends and put me on the bottom. On the bright side, I no longer have to waste so much time wondering where I fit. The bell rings, and I'm about to get up and head for class when I hear voices. I crouch down lower, watching a group of people walk across the stage, talking to each other in hushed tones. A guy's voice says, "See you Thursday." The last person emerges from behind the curtain. She's about to disappear on the opposite side when she stops and takes a few deliberate steps backward. Resting her hands on her hips, she scans the theater and sees me in the front row. "Hey." She walks over and sits with her legs dangling over the edge of the stage. I narrow my eyes to get a better look at her in the dark. "Caroline?" I ask. "Wow, you remembered my name," she says as she jumps down and collapses into the seat on my right. "I'm kind of surprised by that." "Why?" "I don't know. I guess I assumed you were the type of person I'd have to introduce myself to more than once before it would actually stick." "Caroline Madsen," I say, proving that I even remembered her last name. She looks a little impressed. "So did you see the rest of us?" she asks, pointing at the empty stage. "I guess I saw a bunch of people go by. Why?" Her mouth turns down at the corners. "No reason, just wondering." But now she has me curious. And besides, this is a great distraction. "Who were they? Where were you coming from?" "Nowhere, we were just looking around." I start to press her for more details, but before I can say anything, she leans over, stopping a few inches short of my face. "Have you been crying?" I sink farther in my chair. "Guy trouble?" she asks. "No." "Girl trouble?" She looks at me out of the corner of her eye. "No, not like that. But, well, actually, yeah, sort of." "Let me guess." She taps her finger against her temple. "Your locker-wrapping best friends are actually manipulative bitches?" I look up at her from under my eyelashes. Sometimes. Is it that obvious? You can take in a lot of information from a few lockers away.
She scoots back into her chair and slides down, kicking her legs out in front of her and crossing them at the ankles, mirroring my posture exactly.
You know what you need?
I don't answer her, and after a long pause she says, nicer friends. Funny, my psychiatrist has been saying that for years. As soon as the words leave my mouth, I suck in a breath. No one outside my family knows about my psychiatrist. She's not my biggest secret, but she's right up there with the rest of them. I look over at Caroline for a reaction, expecting a biting comment or a condescending stare.
Why do you see a psychiatrist? She asks, like it's no big deal.
Apparently I'm not keeping secrets from her, because words start spilling out on their own. OCD. I'm more obsessive than compulsive, so most of the disorder part takes place in my own head. That makes it pretty easy to hide. No one knows. I can't believe I'm saying this out loud. She looks at me like she's actually interested, so I keep talking. But I obsess about a lot of things, like guys and my friends and totally random stuff. I sort of latch on to a thought and I can't let it go. Sometimes the thoughts come rapid fire and cause an anxiety attack. Oh, and I have this weird thing with the number 3. I count a lot. I sort of have to do things in threes.
Why threes?
I slowly shake my head.
I have no idea.
That sounds pretty horrible, Sam.
Sam.
Caroline's looking at me as if this whole thing is completely fascinating. She leans forward, resting her elbows on her knees, exactly the way my psychiatrist does when she wants me to keep talking. So I do. I can't turn my thoughts off, so I barely sleep. Without meds, I don't get much more than 3 or 4 hours a night. It's been that way since I was 10. Now there's a hint of sympathy in her eyes. I don't want her to feel sorry for me. It's okay, I'm on anti-anxiety meds, and I know how to control the panic attacks. At least I think I do. It's been a little harder since the bizarre impulse to slash the Valentine's Day roses.
I started seeing a psychiatrist when I was 13, Caroline says matter-of-factly.
After a long pause, she adds, depression.
Really?
I ask, resting my elbow on the armrest between us.
We've tried different antidepressants over the years, but I don't know, sometimes it feels like it's getting worse, not better.
I was on antidepressants for a while, too. It sounds so strange to hear myself admit all this. I've never talked with anyone my age about this stuff.
Caroline reclines into the chair and smiles. She looks pretty when she does. She'd be even prettier if she would just wear a little makeup. I bet I could help her.
I no longer have plans to be at a fancy spa with my 4 best friends this weekend. I don't have any plans at all.
Hey, what are you doing on Saturday night?
She crinkles her nose.
I don't know, nothing, why?
Want to come to my house? We can watch a movie or something.
Maybe I could talk her into letting me give her a mini makeover, too. A few highlights to give her hair a little dimension, some concealer to hide the pockmarks and blemishes. Nothing dramatic, just a touch of color on her cheeks, eyes, lips.
Caroline pulls a pen out of the front pocket of her baggy jeans.
I'll text it to you, I say, reaching for my phone.
She shakes her head.
Technology is a trap, she says, waving her pen in the air. Go.
I give her my house number and street, and she scribbles it on her palm and pockets the pen again. Then she bounces up from her chair so quickly I jump in my seat. She backs toward the stage, places her hands on the surface, and with a little hop she's sitting on the edge again. She leans forward and checks the room.
I want to help you, Sam.
Wait, what? She wants to help me?
What do you mean?
Can you keep a secret?
I'm great at secrets. My friends tell me all their dirt, knowing I'll never breathe a word of it to anyone. They have no idea I've been keeping a mental disorder from them for the last 5 years.
Of course I can, I say.
Good, I want to show you something. But if I do, you can't tell anyone, and I mean anyone, not even your shrink.
But I tell her everything.
Not this.
Caroline waves me over to her. See that spot over there?
She points at the piano in the corner of the stage. Come back here on Thursday, right after the lunch bell rings, and wait for me. Don't say a word to anyone. Hide behind the curtain and don't come out until I come get you.
Why?
Because. She grabs me by the shoulders. I'm going to show you something that will change your whole life. I roll my eyes. Oh, please. It might not. Caroline moves her hands to my cheeks. But if I'm right about you, it will. In the deep. The elevator is already waiting. I press 7, and then, because I can't help it, I press 7 2 more times. As soon as I open the office door and step inside, Colleen's head pops up from behind the counter, and her whole face brightens.
Ah, it must be Wednesday.
At first I found her regular greeting mortifying, but then I realized there are never any other patients here, and even if there were, there's no reason to hide. We're all regulars.
She's running about 5 minutes late. Water?
She asks, and I nod. I fish my phone out of my purse, pop in my earbuds, and put on my typical waiting room playlist, In the Deep, named for lyrics in a Florence and the Machine song. I think of my naming strategy as a hobby, even though my psychiatrist doesn't see it that way. I don't simply listen to music, I study the lyrics. And when I'm done making a playlist, I pick 3 words from one of the songs, 3 words that perfectly encapsulate the collection, and that becomes its title. I let my head fall back against the wall and close my eyes, ignoring all the motivational posters hanging above me. I mentally transport myself back to the pool 2 weeks ago, to that moment when Brandon kissed me but didn't, and I feel my face relax as I relive the fantasy again. His mouth was so warm, and he smelled good like Sprite and coconut sunscreen.
She's ready for you, Colleen says.
Sue's office hasn't changed in 5 years. The same books line the same shelves, and the same certificates hang from the walls covered in the same beige paint. The same photographs of the same children stand propped up on her desk, suspended in time like the office itself.
Hey, Sam.
Sue crosses the room to greet me. She's this tiny Japanese woman with thick black hair that hangs to her shoulders, and she's always impeccably dressed. She looks like she'd be refined and soft-spoken until she opens her mouth. I'd only been seeing her for a few months when I came up with the nickname Shrink Sue. I never actually thought I'd call her that to her face, but one day it slipped out. She asked me how I came up with it, and I told her it sounded like something badass you'd call out while throwing a judo chop. Until that point, I hadn't really stopped to question whether or not psychiatrists appreciated being called shrinks. I was only 11 years old, and I didn't want to offend her, but once I'd said it, I couldn't take it back. But Sue said she liked the name, and she told me I could call her anything. I could even call her a bitch to her face or behind her back, because there would certainly be times I'd want to. I liked her even more after that. She sits in the chair across from me and hands me my thinking putty. It's supposed to take my mind off the words I'm saying and give me something to do with my hands, so I don't spend the entire 50-minute session scratching the back of my neck in threes. So, she begins, opening the brown leather folio across her lap like she always does. Where do you want to start today? Not with the eights, not with the spa. I don't know. I wish I could tell her about my secret meeting with Caroline tomorrow, because that's pretty much all I've thought about over the last 2 days, but I can't break my promise. Then I think about the rest of the conversation, the two of us bonding over medication and therapy sessions. Actually, I sort of made a new friend this week. The words sound so dorky coming out of my mouth, but apparently Shrink Sue doesn't hear them that way, because her eyes light up, like this is the best news she's heard in ages.
Really? What's she like?
She asks, and I feel myself mimicking her smile. I can't help it. I think about the way Caroline put her hands on my face like an old friend. That look in her eyes when she said she wanted to help me. The whole thing caught me completely off guard. Well, she's not like any of the crazy eights, I say, picturing her long, stringy hair and lack of makeup and those chunky hiking boots. She's kind of awkward, but she's nice. I barely know her, but I already think she sort of gets me.
Sue opens her mouth, but I hold my finger up in the air between us before she can speak.
Please don't say it. Her mouth snaps shut. This doesn't mean I'm leaving the Eights. You always make it sound easy, Sue, but I can't just find new friends.
I put air quotes on the last words.
They are my friends. These are the people that every girl in my class aspires to be friends with. Besides, it would kill them if I left, especially Haley.
Sue shifts in her chair and crosses one leg over the other, taking an authoritative pose.
You have to make decisions that are best for you, Sam, not for Haley or anyone else, she says in her straightforward way.
Sarah made a decision that was best for her, and look what happened. I'm not about to be on the receiving end of what we all did to Sarah, shooting her dirty looks as we passed her in the halls, talking about her from the other side of the cafeteria, leaving her out of our plans for the weekend. I'm not proud of myself, but when she dumped us for her drama club friends, we made it feel like an act of disloyalty on her part.
She's probably quite happy, Sue says.
I'm sure she is, but being part of the Eights makes me happy. Their friendship might require weekly therapy, but I have fun with them, and I'd be truly crazy to say goodbye to parties every weekend, cute guys crowded around us at lunch, and VIP tickets to every major concert that comes to town.
Either way, this is a really positive step, Sam. I'm glad to see you making new friends.
Friend. Singular. One person. I hold up a finger. And no one can ever know about Caroline.
Why not?
Before I even realize what's happening, my chin begins to tremble. I take a deep breath to steady myself and stare at the carpet.
Why can't they know about her, Sam? Sue repeats softly.
Because, the word comes out all wobbly. If they kick me out, I can't finish my thought. I squeeze the back of my neck 3 times as hard as I can, but it doesn't help. I don't have any place else to go. The tears start to well up, but I fight them off, biting the inside of my lower lip, forcing my gaze toward the ceiling. Sue must be able to tell how uncomfortable I am, because she jumps in and says, "Hey, let's change the subject."
"Please," I whisper.
"Did you have a chance to print out those pictures?"
"Yeah."
I blow out a breath and reach into my bag. Dad took a bunch of photos during the county championship meet and sent them to me. Last week I showed them to Sue. She spent 20 minutes sliding her fingertip across the screen of my phone, carefully taking in each photo. Then she asked me to pick my 3 favorites, print them out, and bring them with me today. "These are great," she says, taking her time to examine each one.
"Tell me, why did you choose these 3?
"I don't know," I say with a shrug. "I guess because I look happy." Her expression tells me that wasn't the answer she was looking for.
"What word comes to mind when you see this?" she asks, holding one of the pictures up in front of me. "One word."
Cassidy is squeezing me hard. Her nose is all scrunched up and her mouth is open like she's screaming. Dad took it right after I beat her time by 1/10 of a second, breaking her record in the girls' butterfly. I was afraid she'd be upset, but she wasn't.
"Friendship."
She holds up the next one. My stomach feels all light and fluttery when I see Brandon resting one hand on my shoulder and pointing at the first place medal around my neck with the other. He kept high-fiving me and hugging me all day. Sue wouldn't approve of the word love, even though it's the first one that pops into my mind, so I fix my gaze on the medal, thinking about the way he made me push myself all summer, making me believe I could be faster, stronger.
Inspiration.
I feel my face heat up, and I'm relieved when Sue moves on to the next picture and says, "I was really hoping you'd print this one." Dad took it with a long lens, and you can see every detail in my face. I'm standing on the block in my stance, seconds away from diving in, and even though my goggles are covering my eyes, you can see them clearly. I stare at the picture for a long time, trying to think of a single word to describe what I like so much about it. I look strong, determined,
like a girl who speaks her mind, not someone who cowers in the dark every time she gets her feelings hurt.
Confidence, I finally say.
Sue's nod is proud and purposeful, and I can tell my word was spot on.
Here's what I'd like you to do. Bring these to school tomorrow and tape them on the inside of your locker door.
She taps the last one with her perfectly manicured fingernail. Put this one right at eye level. Look at it off and on all day to remind you of your goal this year.
Which is? She prompts.
I'm going to make swimming a priority so I can get a scholarship and go to the college of my choice, even if it's far away.
The far away part makes me start hyperventilating. I feel nauseous when I think about moving away from here, leaving my mom, leaving Sue. But I force myself to stare at the picture, locking in on that strong, determined expression.
A swim scholarship, competing at a college level, a chance to reinvent myself.
This girl looks like someone who could do all those things.
And don't forget, Sue says, this isn't summer Sam who shows up in June and disappears when school starts. This is you.
Is it? I ask, staring at the photo. It was only 2 weeks ago, but I already feel like a completely different person.
Sue rests her elbows on her knees, forcing me to meet her eyes.
Yes, it is. And she's in there all year long, I promise. You just have to find a way to pull her out.
By your side. On Thursday morning after first bell, I linger, taking my time at my locker. I keep peering toward the end of the row looking for Caroline, but she hasn't shown up. I haven't seen her once since we sat together in the theater on Monday. Finally, I give up and race to class. The last few days have been brutal, with Caroline's words running through my head in an endless loop. I can't imagine what she wants to show me today, or how it could possibly change my whole life. And if she's right about me, what does that even mean? Lunch can't come soon enough. As soon as the fourth period bell sounds, I stand up and race past the rest of my U.S. history classmates, bolting for the door. Everyone heads for the cafeteria and the quad, but I take off in the opposite direction. When I arrive at the double doors that lead into the theater, I take a quick look around. Then I slip inside and go straight to the piano, hiding from view like Caroline told me to. I keep checking the time on my phone, and I'm starting to wonder if this is all a joke when I hear voices, quiet but audible, coming toward me. I'm tempted to take a step forward so I can get a look at their faces, but I press my back flat against the curtain and tell myself not to move. The voices fade away, and Caroline pokes her head around the curtain, curls her finger toward herself and whispers, "Follow me."
"Where are we going?" I ask, and she brings her finger to her lips, shushing me.
We disappear backstage, and about 20 feet away I see a door closing. We wait for it to shut completely, and then we creep forward. "Open it," she says, and then adds the word, "quietly." She rests her hands on her hips, and I read her t-shirt. "Everyone hates me because I'm paranoid." I turn the knob as gently as I can, and soon I'm staring at a steep, narrow staircase. My first instinct is to close the door and turn back the way we came. I shoot Caroline a questioning look, and she gestures toward the stairs. "Go ahead, go down."
"Down?"
She raises an eyebrow. "Well, they don't go up now, do they?"
"No, they don't."
"Here," she says, "I'll go first." And before I can say another word, she pushes past me and starts down the stairs. And because I can't imagine doing anything else at this point, I close the door behind us and follow her. The narrow hallway is painted dark gray, and I look up at the ceiling lights, wondering why they're so dim. Caroline and I turn down another hallway, just in time to see the door at the far end swinging shut. I stay on her heels until we're standing in front of it. This is beyond creepy.
"What is this place?"
She ignores my question and points to the doorknob. "Okay, I'm going to be by your side the entire time, but this is all up to you from here. You have to do all the talking."
"Talking? To whom? What do you mean it's up to me?"
"You'll see." I don't want to see. I want to leave now. This is bizarre.